We are ready to go back to 2 Chronicles chapter 31, where we're going to pick up the story in verse number 11 of King Hezekiah's great revival of the Israeli people. He had just become the solo king of the kingdom of southern Judah upon his father Ahaz's death earlier in this year. The year is 726 BC. And so he has the temple cleansed. He has the temple rededicated. He invites everybody to come for a grand Passover and unleavened bread celebration in the second month of that year. He invites people to come down from northern Israel because they're still around, and it is an amazing time that they have together. 2 weeks of worship and celebration and feasting and fellowship and music. And then when they leave, they all go home and start cleaning up all the junk that has accumulated. And we're talking about spiritual junk, the paganism that has taken hold both in southern Judah and also in northern Israel. And so southern Judah is really getting cleaned up. Northern Israel, not quite as much, because only a small portion of people in northern Israel came south for this great revival Passover and unleavened bread. So between the time of Pentecost and Feast of Unleavened Bread, that is between the third and the seventh months, they are bringing in the harvest. They're bringing the tithe to Jerusalem. And there is a ton of stuff. It hasn't been done this way for a while. And so King Hezekiah is very pleased. He is happy. High priest Azariah, he is very pleased. He's very happy. They've got more than what they need to take care of the needs of the Levites, the priests, and the poor people. And so they've got excess. And so what are they going to do with that? That's 2 Chronicles 31:11. Then Hezekiah commanded them to prepare chambers in the house of He Who Is, and they prepared them. Now, you may remember that there is an annex that wraps around the north, west, and south side of the shrine building. It's three stories tall, and it has multiple rooms. It is to be storage facilities for things needed for use by the priests and the Levites. So apparently, Hezekiah says, you need to clear out some of those rooms and use them for storage of all this excess. And so they faithfully brought in the contributions, the tithes, and the dedicated things. The chief officer in charge of them was Konaniah, the Levite, with Shimei, his brother, as second, while Yahiel and Azariah, Nehat, Asahel, Yeremot, Yozabad, Elial, Eshmakiah, and Mehat, and Benaniah were overseers assisting Konaniah and Shimei, his brother. By the appointment of Hezekiah the king and Azariah, the chief officer of the house of God. So, You need good people to take care of the logistics of the worship and fellowship of the saints. This temple is for an entire ethnic group, an entire nation. So they need a lot of people to help in that. Each congregation of the Lord in our modern period, we need the volunteers, sometimes the paid staff, to take care of the logistics of the building, of the worship services, of the programming. And so we need good people that can be trusted to take care of that. But we also need the resources. One of the things that I talk to people about when it comes to the money of the church is that the gifts coming in, the tithes and the offerings coming in to the church, are still devoted to the exact same things they've always been devoted to. And that is to keep up a public place of worship. Whether it's a house church, it's still going to need upkeep. Or if it's a dedicated church building, it's going to need upkeep. It's going to need logistical support. And so we need finances for that. That's part of it. And then another part for the tithes and the offerings is to pay the full-time and part-time staff. Those folks are giving all of their time, or at least a significant portion of their time, to take care of the business of the church, to take care of the business of the Lord. And so they need to be paid. And that's part of the reason for the financing. And then the other part is going to be needed to keep the worship public and to make sure that the people who fall on rough times can be taken care of during those rough times. And so we need mission support. We need outreach support. We need benevolence support. So that's the reason you need to be giving generously a tithe and sometimes offerings to your local congregation. If you're not doing that, you and the Lord need to have a chat. That needs to happen. Because if the church does not have the finances, I can tell you from experience what's going to happen. First, they'll trim the benevolence funds. Then they'll trim the funds that are going to other outside entities like missions. And then after that, they will start trimming the staff. And if they're still having problems to make ends meet, they'll close the church. So folks, please, be part of your home congregation. Give them your regular attendance, your regular service, but also make sure you give them your tithe and offering. They need it in order to get the work of the Lord done. All right, back to the text. I interrupted myself when we were having lists of names. Verse 14, and Koreh, the son of Imnah, the Levite, keeper of the east gate, was over the freewill offerings to God to apportion the contribution reserved for he who is and the most holy offerings. You remember that they have a security force that takes care of the temple complex. You've got to make sure that people that come in are appropriately cleansed, dressed, that we don't have any security breaches. We also have people that get lost. Security takes care of a lot of that stuff. We don't want scammers. We don't want pickpockets and things doing things in the Holy Temple Mount. And so security takes care of that. This particular temple officer, though, he doesn't just simply overlook security. He also apparently takes care of some of the finances, the freewill offerings. Verse 15, Eden, Miniamin, Yeshua, Shemiah, Amariah, Shekaniah were faithfully assisting him in the cities of the priests to distribute the portions to their brothers, old and young alike, by the visions, except those enrolled by genealogy, males from 3 years old and upward, all who entered the house of he who is, as the duty of each day required for their service, according to their offices, by their divisions. One of the other logistical things is something I already mentioned, and that is most of the priests and Levites spend the majority of their year in towns other than Jerusalem. They only serve twice a year, 1 week at a time, at the Jerusalem temple. The rest of the time they live with their families in Levitical towns, priestly towns scattered around Judea. And so that's where their families live. And they are supposed to be supported out of the tithes. So these guys are having to take tithe portions around to the Levitical cities, around to the priestly cities on a regular basis to make sure that those families have what they need to live. Verse 17, the enrollment of the priests was according to their fathers' households. That of the Levites from 20 years old and upward was according to their offices by their divisions. They were enrolled with all of their little children, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, the whole assembly, for they were faithful in keeping themselves holy. This is significant because they are paid out of what we would call ministry funds. The tithe that comes in to Jerusalem can only be paid out to authorized persons. And those authorized persons are Levites, priests, their family members, and to benevolence issues. And so that's why we have to have a clear documentation of who is authorized to be paid with these ministry funds. Verse 19, and for the sons of Aaron, the priests, who were in the fields of common land belonging to their cities, there were men in the several cities who were designated by name to distribute portions to every male among the priests and to everyone among the Levites who was enrolled. So you have payroll people, pay agents. They're not taking money. They're not doing silver and gold and stuff like that. They're actually taking grain and meat, and they're delivering them to all the Levitical cities, the priestly cities. And all this is being done at the command of King Hezekiah, who is insisting we need to do things according to God's word. Verse 20, thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good and right and faithful before he who is his God, and every work that he had undertook in the service of the house of God and in accordance with the law and the commandments, seeking his God, he did with all his heart, and he prospered. So he is a good man. We are told elsewhere that he was the best king, morally speaking, that Judah ever had. And so that is why southern Judah, Jerusalem in particular, under Hezekiah's leadership, is going to be spared the invasion of the Assyrians under Tiglath-Pileser III that is coming next. And actually, I guess it's Tiglath's son that's going to be doing this. So that brings us to the year 725 BC. It's the year after King Hezekiah's great feast and rededication. It is described in 2 Kings chapter 18, verse number 9. In the fourth year of King Hezekiah, and this is counted from when he was made crown prince, in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel. So he's the guy in charge of northern Israel, who has just recently rebelled against Assyria. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Assyria and besieged it. So northern Israel's capital city is now under besiegement. I've got another passage that contributes to this information, and that's 2 Kings 17:3. 2 Kings 17:3. And this is about Hoshea. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his vassal and paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria found treachery in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and offered no tribute to the king of Assyria as he had done year by year. So basically, Shalmaneser, when he comes to power, comes to renew the understanding that northern Israel is under Assyrian tribute. Hoshea, we are told, assassinated the king before him, but the records of the Assyrian Empire, the records of Tiglath-Pileser III, is that Tiglath declared that Hosea was the king of northern Israel. So he was in tributary relationship with Tiglath-Pileser III. When Tiglath passes from the scene and Shalmaneser comes to power, he comes and renews that understanding. But apparently, Hoshea eventually goes, no, I don't want this. I don't like being under Shalmaneser. So he sends private messages down to Egypt saying, I would like your help in getting myself out from under the boot of the Assyrians. Now, the Assyrians and the Egyptians, they are already kind of gearing up to be in a fight with one another. They control bread baskets. The Assyrians are in control of Mesopotamia, the great Fertile Crescent, the northern part of the Fertile Crescent. The Egyptians, they have the Nile and the Nile Delta, which is a great big breadbasket. In between the two of them is the land bridge where Israel lives. And so Israel is kind of stuck between two powers that would like to take over the territory of the other power. So Hoshea of northern Israel wants to throw his lot in with Egypt. And the moment that he does that, he quits paying his tribute money to Assyria, probably because he's now going to pay tribute money to Egypt. And the king of Assyria doesn't like that. Therefore, we're told, the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. And then the king of Assyria invaded all the land and came to Samaria, and for 3 years he besieged it. So northern Israel is now under Assyrian assault, which was exactly what was predicted by the prophet Amos, by the prophet Hoshea, that is the, you know, Hosea the prophet, who's married to Gomer, and what has also been prophesied by another prophet that we haven't talked about yet. His name is Micah, or Micah. And so we're going to spend a little time going through the prophecies of Micah. So go ahead and turn to that book. And it has some interesting prophecies in it that relate to the first and second comings of Jesus Christ. And so we'll bring those up at the appropriate time. These prophecies start earlier than where we're at in our chronology right now, because I was just talking about Samaria becoming besieged in 723 or 725 BC, and that siege will finish in 723. But this is what we read at the beginning of the book. The word of He Who Is that came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. So you remember that Jotham was the son of the great king Uzziah, and that he reigned for 16 years, and then he was usurped by his wicked son Ahaz, who reigned for a few years, and then Hezekiah becomes the solo king of southern Judah after his father Ahaz dies. So Micah has already been prophesying for several years by the time we get to the siege of Samaria. But it is at this point that some of his things start becoming real. And so that's why I kind of saved the whole book until this point in our story chronologically. And notice that he was prophesying not only about what was going to happen in northern Israel, he's prophesying about what's going on in southern Judah as well. And here is the beginning of his message. Verse 2. Hear, Shema. That's the imperative form of listen. And it is expecting obedience. Hear, you peoples, all of you. Pay attention, O earth, and all that's in it. And the word earth here could be land, meaning as in the land of promise, the promised land, the people of Israel's land. Let he who is be a witness against you. That is, he who is God. The Lord from his holy temple. So God has made his name to dwell at Jerusalem, at the temple. That is the centralized place in the promised land that he is represented from on his holy throne in the Holy of Holies. And so Micah begins by reminding everybody, God is speaking with the authority of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords from his place on the throne of Israel. Verse 3, for behold, he who is coming out of his place, and he will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. So God is coming in judgment. The mountains will melt under him. The valleys will split open like wax before the fire, like waters poured out down on a steep place. And so we've got like God coming in judgment, and it'll be like a flash flood. It'll be like great ecological disaster. Some of this may be very literal in the sense that God will bring ecological disasters in connection with the coming of the Assyrians. All this is for the transgression of Jacob and for the sins of the house of Israel. So remember again that this prophet starts his prophesying several years earlier, before Hezekiah the good king came to power. And so there is sin in the camp. There is sin in the country, both north and south. And so he is saying, this judgment is coming because there's sin in the house of Israel. And then he says this, what is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? So, the capital city of northern Israel. What is the high place of Judah? Is it not Jerusalem? And you remember, we just talked about Hezekiah having to clean up through the hands of the priests and the Levites the entire Temple Mount and the city of Jerusalem and the cities of Judah. Because under his ungodly, paganized father Ahaz, southern Judah had become an outpost of ungodly behavior, of idol worship and paganism. And so Micah is speaking out against that. It's bad in Samaria. It's bad in Jerusalem. And here comes the word of the Lord, verse 6. Therefore, I will make Samaria a heap in the open country, a place for planting vineyards, and I will pour down her stones into the valley and uncover her foundations. So Samaria as a city is going to be completely ruined. The walls are going to be pulled down. All of that stone is going to pour down into the lower places around the hill of Samaria. The very base foundations will be able to be seen again. It will be a ruin. And in later times, people will come in and plant vineyards where the city used to be. All her carved images shall be beaten to pieces. All her wages shall be burned with fire. All her idols I will lay waste. For from the fee of a prostitute she gathered them, and to the fee of a prostitute they shall return. And you remember when we were doing both the book of Amos and the book of Hosea, that God portrayed northern Israel in particular as a cheating wife, as a prostitute that was cheating on God. And so here is that same language, that God is now going to take the payment she got for her whoring, for her cheating and sleeping around. He's going to take all of that booty of idols, and they will be destroyed. They will be melted down, broken to pieces, and taken away by the Assyrians. For this I will lament and wail. I will go stripped and naked. I will make lamentation like the jackals and mourning like the ostriches. So this is Micah talking. He says, this is the reason I'm going to go around crying. This is the reason I'm going to rip my clothes. I'm going to not be properly dressed because I am grieving over what is coming for both northern Israel and for southern Judah because of their sin of unfaithfulness to He who is God. Mark your place. We'll get back to this again next time God gives us the chance to get into His Word.